This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not that the Celtics won game one that surprised most folks. It may have surprised many. It's the fact that they won by 25. Had a 28-point lead at one point that probably shocked some. They get ready for game two tomorrow night at the TD Garden. Chris Mannix writes about a lot of things, but especially basketball for Yahoo Sports, and joins us online. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Did the margin of victory shock you yesterday?
Of course. Boston, you know, whether it's the playoffs or the regular season, with Kyrie, without Kyrie, what they do is they play from behind. I mean, they have to, you know, rip leads apart and come back from. Did it in game one of the Philly series. You half expect them to do it in game one of this series. But, you know, what we've seen is that incrementally, you know, this team has gotten more and more comfortable playing together offensively. And as we saw all season long, you know, this Cavs team is just really bad defensively.
Have you ever seen a player get applause after answering a question in the post-game press conference?
Not like that. And in the moment, it was pretty funny. I didn't applaud, but I had seen that before. It was at the end of what was a pretty loose press conference for LeBron. I mean, you know, from start to finish, it was, you know, remain calm, all is well out there. And, you know, no matter how many people tried to, you know, get him to admit that, you know, he was worried about something after game one, he wasn't, whether it was his own performance, the 3-point shooting from his team. He just wasn't having it. And, you know, that was a kind of dry comedy at the end there when he said he recited the first three plays of the fourth quarter.
What was it that Marcus Morris did to have such a great game? I mean, he was great offensively, but specifically defensively, forcing LeBron into, you know, seven turnovers, a bunch of missed shots. I know it was a team effort, but Morris specifically, what did he do?
You know, he stayed in front of him and did all the things that you'd like a guy to do defensively, but I just thought LeBron took himself out of the game. Now early on, when it's still a game, and you know the first 5-6 minutes of the first, I mean, I thought they did play some good defense against LeBron. They threw a bunch of different looks at him, not just Marcus Morris, but you know, building that kind of wall in front of him, so he always sees an extra defender that was there. But after that, I mean, it just looked like LeBron was disengaged. I mean, I watched most of that Toronto series, and you know, every time that LeBron got a mismatch, whether it was, you know, on Kyle Lowry or on C.J. Miles, he would attack that mismatch. He was getting switches with Rozier and with Smart and with others, and he wasn't really going at him. And look, I know he talks about how he treats game one like it's a feeling-out process, like an early rounds of a boxing match, but it was bizarre to see a guy that was so aggressive against the Raptors really mail it in the first game of the series.
Chris, explain to Celtics fans and me why what happened yesterday isn't necessarily an aberration and could be repeated by the Celtics as this series goes on.
Well, I think defensively they can continue to make an impact. I mean, one of their mantras throughout this entire postseason has been, we're not afraid to let one guy beat us, whether it was Giannis in the first round or Embiid or Simmons in the next. I mean, they'll live with contested jump shots or even 3-point shots from one player as long as the rest of them don't get theirs. And you know, I thought they did a really good job of defending Kevin Love, really good job of sticking with Kyle Korver. On the flip side, as much as we like to sit here and say, all right, well, you know, Cleveland's going to play better and LeBron's going to give us his best shot, I didn't think Boston even played his best game. I mean, Rozier was very average in that one. Jason Tatum had good numbers, but I didn't think he played all that well. I mean, he had good spurts, you know, first quarter, third quarter, he put some runs together. He didn't play a complete game. And, you know, the Marcus Smart experience, as I like to call it, wasn't that great either. So I think Boston can put some things together and play even better in game two.
It sounds like Tristan Thompson's going to get the start in game two. Would you expect any kind of counter from the Celtics, or do you think they should roll out the same starting lineup?
No, they'll roll out the same starting lineup, but I think that if it turns out that Thompson picks up where he left off, and really against Al Horford, it's like Tristan Thompson's picking up where he left off for the last 5 years. you'll see Aaron Baines pretty quickly. I mean, I think Morris, you want to bring him right back because the way he defended LeBron, but Thompson was such a big presence there, albeit in limited minutes. Whenever he kind of got switches on him or even Horford on him, he was just able to overpower in the paint. You can't have him doing that. You can't have, you know, what'll kill you in a game like this is second and third chance opportunities, and that's where Thompson excels, and that's really where only Aaron Baines had any impact on him last night. So I think you'll see the same starting lineup, but you'll see Baines pretty quickly.
We're talking to Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports, talking about the Celtics and Cavs and the NBA playoffs. If we take it as a given that LeBron James is the best player in this series, and I think we are in agreement that we all do, Who's the second, third, and fourth best players?
I think you have to look over at Boston. I mean, you know, Kevin Love had a great second round, but he was, you know, very average or worse than average in that first round. He probably has more talent than anybody else, but I think it's Tatum and Brown after that. It's Horford after that. I mean, you know, you're at the very least evenly matched from 2-3 on down in Boston's case. It's just how much do you give up if you're defending against LeBron James? What kind of shots do you give up? I mean, I don't think Boston is going to give up a layup line to LeBron in the next one, but if he wants to shoot 34 times, they'll let him shoot 34 times. That they don't believe that's going to hurt them. So I think that it's Love in that mix, but then it's Tatum, Brown, and Horford right after that.
Now, Dale and I were talking about, you know, if LeBron wins this series or if he loses this series, is he more or less likely to leave Cleveland? I personally think he's gone no matter what. Do you think this series could determine one way or another what happens with him?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, trying to get inside LeBron's head is like a maze up there of trying to figure out what he's got going on. I mean, conventional wisdom says the more games you win, the better chance you have of retaining him. So they win this series, I'd say they've got a better shot of keeping him around. But one thing I know about LeBron from, you know, covering him, you know, really since almost day one, he's always got something else going on. In 2010, it was, well, you know, he's got the 2008 Olympic team and all those guys talked about playing together, and that was the genesis of the Miami team. In 2014, we learned after the fact that he had buried the hatchet with ownership in Cleveland, you know, long before he made that decision. And, you know, the seeds had even been planted earlier about potentially coming back to Cleveland, both for, you know, basketball reasons and, of course, LeBron's desire to, you know, kind of be out there and be part of that community once again. So no matter what happens, you know, no matter what happens in the playoffs, I'm sure that in October we'll be writing stories about how, you know, LeBron was on, you know, some kind of text chain with Paul George and DeMarcus Cousins, and they were discussing their futures or somebody else that LeBron was talking to about his future.
Do you get the sense, Chris, that the players on the Cleveland Cavaliers like being the supporting cast for the LeBron James show?
Not really. I think they like winning, and, you know, I think they like what comes with the whole LeBron experience. But no, I don't think they like being, you know, basically, you know, low-level supporting actors always blamed for everything wrong. Look, the guys on the floor in Cleveland, you know, they know every possession where we see on a few that, you know, that LeBron doesn't play hard every possession. I mean, how many times did we look at the floor last night and see LeBron, you know, just kind of walking back up the court in transition, or him, you know, not giving it his all in half court defense. He, you know, for you know, legitimate reasons, he's got to, you know, limit himself and not, you know, push himself so hard defensively because of what he has to carry for that team offensively. But yeah, I'm sure the Cavs players, and I know it for a couple of them, you know, hate being punching bags, you know, for LeBron James. So it's a necessary evil in some ways to play on that team.
I think early on when LeBron was in Miami, nobody gave Eric Spoelstra any credit, and then ultimately you find out, oh, wait a minute, that guy is a good head coach. Is Ty Lue, like, speaking of, you know, other players being punching bags, I think Ty Lue is as well. That's sort of how I see it from afar, but is he actually a good head coach?
I think he's got a good head coach potential. And look, what he did in the finals a couple of years ago was remarkable. I mean, he, as we saw with the Raptors series, part of a coach's responsibility is keeping your team up, keeping them focused, even in the face of adversity. And being down in that series against Golden State, the fact that Ty Lue was constantly able to kind of keep them sharp, and LeBron has a lot to do with that too, don't get me wrong, but, you know, Ty Lue has been solid in that regard. Plus, coaching stars isn't easy. If it was easy, there'd be more than a handful of guys over the last 15, 20 years that have won championship rings. Spoelstra, we believed he was a good coach prior to LeBron going down to Miami, and I think he showcased his ability to manage stars and build an offense that features three stars during that time there. I don't know yet if Ty Lue is a good coach. We're probably not going to learn if Ty Lue is a great coach or less than that type of coach until after LeBron James leaves Cleveland.
I don't know who you think is going to win the Western Conference Final. You could make a case for either team. Does it really matter because whoever comes out of the Eastern Conference Final isn't going to beat either of those teams in the West?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way you can look at it. If Boston had Kyrie Irving, I'd give them a chance against Golden State. I mean, you just would, because of the way the Celtics have played the Warriors over the last 2 years. The fact that they can switch everything, that they've got some flexibility, versatility defensively, you give them more than a puncher's chance against the Warriors. But without that one guy, the success the Celtics have had against Golden State, they've always had Isaiah or Kyrie to sort of power them through some dry spells defensive or offensively. Don't have that now, so don't give them much of a chance. And Cleveland, look, it took everything for them to win, one game against the Warriors last year, and they had Kyrie Irving on that team. I just don't see that, or Houston if they come out of that. I think we're looking at the JV bracket and in the Western Conference, the varsity.
Now, last thing for me, the NBA draft lottery is tomorrow. The Celtics have a very, very small chance of getting the second or the third pick from the Sixers trade that they made. How good is this draft class compared to some of the recent ones?
Go first. You know they're going to win it. You know they're going to get the second. Like, this is it's just destined, because it's the Nets pick. It still is the Nets pick as part of this deal because of that trade. So it's the gift that keeps on giving. This Nets pick drama has to end with the Celtics having the number two overall pick in the draft, just to cement it as the worst trade in sports history. Mm-hmm. It has to. But look, it's hard to evaluate the draft right now. It's widely viewed, and I've spent a lot of time on the phone with people the last couple of days because I'm going to head out to the combine on Wednesday. But it's widely viewed as a 5 or 6 player draft at the top, which is very good. You don't often get teams that excited about 5 or 6 players at the top of the draft. I'd be surprised if it's anybody but DeAndre Ayton at number one. After that, you could probably go from Bagley to Mo Bamba to Luka Doncic in that mix. After that, total crapshoot like it is every other year. But I don't know why I keep believing this, but even with that small, 2 or 3% chance,
yeah,
I just believe the Celtics are getting it. I believe they're going to wind up with that pick just to make Billy King bang his head against the wall one more time.
With the U.S. Supreme Court allowing legalized sports betting in the country, I'm assuming your money tomorrow night would be on a big LeBron James game and a much better Cleveland Cavaliers performance?
Yeah, but I think Boston wins because I was in Cleveland for game 2 of that Indiana series, and I watched LeBron do the exact same thing. Game 1 of that series, Cavs lost, LeBron sleepwalked through it. Game 2, he went nuts. I think he had the first 14 points of the game. The Cavs built a 20-point lead, and then they gave it up. They coughed it right back, and it took a Victor Oladipo miss, where Victor Oladipo was as open as he's ever been in his entire life on 3, for that game to not go to overtime, and potentially the Cavs to not lose that. For the first time I won't say the first time in his career, but really for the first time since, probably at least 2010, a great LeBron performance guarantees nothing, because he could play great and they could lose by 10. That's just how this team is built. If he doesn't get help from Love or from Korver, they will lose and go down 0-2.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.